Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, the visual arts, performing arts, storytelling, and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Chris Jonas, co-founder and executive director at Little Globe, as well as Katie Gross, Little Globe's deputy director and education director. Little Globe's mission is to create collaborative art, encourage community capacity, and foster life-affirming connections across the boundaries that divide us. Katie and Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. I was going through your toolkit, which is sort of like a kind of a how-to guide for people to be able to start to tell collaborative stories, to tell their own stories using a variety of different media. One of the things that I found really interesting and useful in the document was you have a whole section of parameters and approaches, in particular for group and collaborative storytelling, like fair use of what might be collected media, but also things like ground rules for conducting group collaborations. Could you all talk about those?
You know, the toolkit itself is a collection of learning the hard way, of going through a project and getting at the end of the project and saying, we didn't get permission from the storytellers to use their stuff. Oh, no. And then creating insufficient media release forms and sort of over the years learning by doing. And so it's a collection of the 20 years of stuff we've discovered. It's also a set of tools we've acquired from other people. It's a bunch of stuff you're not going to think about until it's too late. It's to be really ready when you're out in the field working in collaboration with people so you have the right equipment, you've got the right forms, you know what you're going to do with it afterwards so you can articulate it before, all that stuff.
It also seems like there's a lot in there that helps you get into the frame of mind that these stories are a gift. You're forging a relationship with someone and helping them create a space to tell their own story. And a lot of your talk about ethics and consent and transparency, in my mind, really seems to inform that approach.
Yeah, you have to start with building trust and creating a space where that trust can be built. And that has to be the start of every kind of project like this.
You all have worked with a wide variety of different people, high school students and the elderly. You've talked about incarcerated people and recovering drug users. You've talked about young women of color. And I noticed there's a whole section in your Community Connects toolkit about using a trauma-informed approach. Can you tell us a little bit about how Little Globe works with different communities?
I think part of it is if we don't have the right expertise, knowing that we need to have someone who does have that expertise, depending on that level of trauma that we're stepping into. But we kind of look at it from a broad perspective, too, of historical trauma, creating that space and the environment where people can feel as safe as possible. So then it informs everything, like the prompts that you might use or thinking about the whole parameters of just what that workshop would look like. And do we need people outside of our areas of expertise there, you know, a social worker or people who have more experience with those issues? And checking in with people throughout the process. So it might be that actual process of them telling their story and making sure people are okay. You know, you might have people telling their story one day and then it's 3 months later that the story is actually going out into the world or is being shared in some way. So I think having those mechanisms as well to be able to check in with people because their experience may have changed between when they told their story and when it's being shared. So just keeping that in mind and knowing that people can have the right to want their story taken down, not shared, and having to acknowledge that and respecting that.
If you're talking about stories that are coming from a traumatized person or a traumatized community that person is a member of, you're talking about them feeling safe enough that they can tell their story to begin with.
Well, I think even more profound is that they can choose not to tell their story, or they can choose to tell a different story. It's not our place to convince them to do otherwise. I mean, our teams consist of people who are of and from those communities. Of course, no one person could represent a demographic, But if we're going to be working on the Navajo reservation, ideally the co-facilitators are Navajo, you know, and they have some agility in terms of, you know, the things that I myself wouldn't know. It's not okay to walk into a room and if people are sitting on the floor to not step over their legs. I need a co-facilitator to say, Chris, that's not okay. But also, I think just in terms of sort of being able to hold a space for a hard set of feelings. The safety is not in either avoiding hard material or being able to choose away from hard material or anything like that. It's simply having a space where people feel like the room is able to hold that difficult conversation. There's time to be able to sit with it. It's okay not to talk. There's a whole bunch of arenas of safety, I think, that we have learned and we continue to learn with every different group that we're with. If we have agendas that we can soften them or obliterate them, we can change them, we'll oftentimes change with our storytellers as opposed to our funders, which can be a thing. But that's our ethics. That's what we believe in. There is a certain kind of open-ended conversation that's a necessity in order to create safety. There isn't like one rule of safety. Every person is going to define it differently. And we have to have the time and the space and the openness to be able to hear that and change course accordingly.
Well, I think that's really appropriate too, given the year that we've just come out of, where people have been traumatized on so many different levels and in so many different arenas. It's almost like people don't even have a way of, like you said, being able to sit with it and express it or not express it, whether it's the racial tension we saw last summer or someone who feels that the election was stolen. You know, they're waking up in a state of shock that is so profound that they actually can't express it and feel like they can't even express it because they're just going to have someone jump down their throat.
I think it's a really useful example because in some settings, yes, I think it's just fine for somebody to say, no, that's not okay. It wasn't stolen, whatever. In our setting, the thing that we encourage in those kinds of moments is for people to be able to speak. There's no need for discussion. You know, it's just people telling their stories. And so you can actually have a circle of very different stories. And if we head into arenas as complicated as politics, like you're speaking of, it's one of the most important things that the facilitator can do is to make sure it's okay for there to be different perspectives and that we don't have to reconcile them. Let people talk from your own feelings. And also as an organization, we are also learning and changing and trying to figure things out. So it's all of that.
I kind of want to loop around to some of the things that we were talking about earlier with the extractive versus non-extractive storytelling. It's one thing to go to community of marginalized people and say, tell us all your stories. But I think, you know, especially among Native communities, it's happened so much over the last couple hundred years. It's not a privilege to have somebody show up with a TV camera. And so I want to look at what you're talking about with transparency and trust building. I feel like you all have done this so many times with so many different populations of people who have no reason to trust outside storytellers. So what I'm hearing is you go in with somebody from the community, ideally. And then what does that transparency and trust building look like from there?
Well, ideally, instead of us going into a community, it's a community that recognizes that the tools and the structures that we have is something that they want, and they invite us in. To be given an invitation for us to go and to join a community because we have tools and expertise that's going to help them to address some things. For example, we did a big project in Cuba, New Mexico, which had historically been this amazing joining of the Navajo Eastern Agency community and the Hispanic village of Cuba. And over the years, those two worlds had drifted apart. They used to speak each other's languages. And they said, Little Globe, you guys have something that we could really use, and we would like you to do that. And they invited us in, and we collaborated with the community members themselves as co-leaders. So leadership itself was not just us. Of course, we were the ones who had the funding, and therefore there was a certain power dynamic we had to call out. But our objectives were built together. The tools and the methods we did, we built together. The invitations were provided together and all that. That's kind of the ideal situation. We don't like just going into a community and saying, here, we've got great stuff and you need it. And I think it would be inappropriate for me to go and say, oh, you're a marginalized community. We want to work with you. It's the margins of my world that defines marginalized. You know, for them, I'm the marginalized visitor. And so it's one of the reasons I love being in New Mexico and has changed me so much is that there is no cultural consensus here. There's no mainstream culture. Every town is a border town. We're all navigating different cultural and historic differences. And so it's a privilege for us to have tools that we can share with people. And that's what this toolkit is. We change the projects based on what happens. You know, oftentimes our first steps are wrong and put people off. And we go through the difficult conversations and say, okay, let's rethink this. You know, we were going to make a film, but you guys don't want to make a film. You want to make an after-school program. Let's do that.
This is kind of just a super detailed question. Little Globe was originally formed back east. Is that right, Chris?
We started the work back east in New York City. And then we were asked to go to Ireland and do a project there. And the Santa Fe Opera heard about it. And in 2005, we had an opportunity to do a pretty big project with the Santa Fe Opera. And it just didn't make sense for us to use a fiscal sponsor. So we started a nonprofit to receive the money and to be the administrative program oversight and stuff like that.
That was how long ago that you started in New York?
20 years. I think we're actually going on 21 this spring.
And it was always called Little Globe. I love that name, by the way.
I'll tell the story very quickly. So when Molly Sturgis and I relocated here in Santa Fe in 2001, we both were hired as program directors at the Center for Contemporary Arts. I was a curator. I ran the performing arts. She ran the education. And we met the marvelous Jason Silverman, who we hired to help us do film programming. And when the first Gulf Wars happened, Jason came to us and said, let's do an event of an artistic response to this. And Molly and I were like, that's great. And so the three of us got together and started talking about it. And like, let's have different perspectives and different disciplines and so forth. And let's sort of articulate this, like, yeah, we're in this complicated world, but we're all living in this world together, this little world. And I don't remember who said it, but somebody said, you mean a little globe? And so we named the event Little Globe. This was in 2002. And so then when we decided that we were going to make a nonprofit, again, I don't remember who said it, but somebody pulled to the surface that word, Little Globe. And it's just one of those things, you know, I'm a musician, so I've been in 1,000 bands, some of which have taken decades to find a name that's kind of okay. You're always lucky. It's always a miracle if you find the right name, and Little Globe is the right name.
Let's say I am a teacher or a public librarian or a nonprofit group, and I can see a million ways to apply this and to use the Culture Connects. Do you offer support for classroom teachers or librarians? It sounds like you contract with nonprofit groups. So how would that work?
Our collaborations tend to be three different kinds of ways, I think. Maybe just two. We'll see. We will partner with an organization like Chainbreaker who says, we've got the data, we need the testimonies. So we'll work together and do that. We write grants, therefore, together, unless one of the parties already has funding. So in those cases, it's a partnership. Other cases, we have a set of skills and we have expertise on the team for training, and we will contract with entities. The third way is just that we form a relationship and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. And I'd say that third way is the most fulfilling, where we learn about somebody and we develop conversations, and then over time something happens and we find ourselves working together. That's my favorite one, because oftentimes the opportunities come kind of unexpectedly and it's like, it's top of mind, we're ready to go, let's apply for this together, there's an opportunity with the city to do this, whatever it is. But that said, we are a nonprofit and our job is to be as responsive as possible to partners and institutions and teachers and residents.
We're trying to build our institutional capacity to be able to respond to entities who can't necessarily contract with us. So more and more, we want to not only offer the toolkit for free, but be able to then provide tutorials and trainings as well, if that is needed within classrooms. And in the past, we've had specific grants that have allowed us to go into schools. And so just kind of piecemealing it together from different sources of funding to try to make it happen. Our goal is to be able to offer it to schools and classrooms and other nonprofit organizations and people who need it the most, and then find the ways to pay for that, whether it's through individual donors who could help sponsor those sorts of things. We're exploring all different kinds of ways to pay for that.
Just remarkable work. Thank you both so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you both.
This has been amazing. Thank you.
And if you would like more information about Little Globe, you can visit their website at littleglobe.org. You can also see some examples of their storytelling efforts at vimeo.com/littleglobe. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum. I never dreamed that